And our next speaker will be Ann Scales.
So I'm just going to walk you through how we at the Boston Public Health Commission use social media. First, I think we have to answer the question, why are we using it? Are we using it just because it exists, or are we using it because there is a really good reason to? As Julia and others have said, technology certainly has changed the way that people get information. We know from various studies that online use is surging, that print and TV, radio, not so much. Nearly 75% of U.S. teens and young adults, 75% of teens and young adults in this country, and 40% of older Americans use social media. That's according to the Pew Internet and American Life Project last year. And 8 in 10 internet users look online for health information. That's a really amazing statistic when you think about it. We also use it because it is an effective, low-cost, and as others have said, timely way to share information, to engage audiences, and to integrate messages. The engaging audience is really important because we don't use it just to talk. We use it to listen. That's how we know, for instance, if we, when Julia mentioned the Ted Bruschi story, that people were talking about it on Twitter and Facebook, and it was an opportunity that we had to engage those audience, to join that conversation. So it's not just a one-way conversation. It is really about, the dialogue. We use these various platforms, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. We have a blog called Healthy Food on the Budget. We also have a podcast series, Boston Health Click. And we have about 7 other Facebook pages that were started by various programs or teen partners. So when we got started, we had to first build a community. And this is sort of a simple way to start getting your platforms on the minds of other folks. What we did was we reached out to influential bloggers in Boston, such as Universal Hub. We reached out to influential tweeters, and we know who they are because they have a high number of followers. We also, since a lot of the work that we do is sort of family-parented centered, at times anyways, we reached out to a lot of our campaigns. We reached out to mommy bloggers. It was obvious to us that we needed to engage local and state health departments. Boston's a big old college town, so we reached out to the universities, particularly those with public health programs, to let them know that, you know, we're in this space and come join the conversation with us, other government agencies and community organizations. We launched Facebook. In fact, it was the last of our platforms that we launched. We launched it in April 2009. We currently have 1,900 likes. You know, Facebook went from having friends to fans to likes. So likes is a new thing, because you may like something and not be a friend of it. So it's probably a better word for Facebook than fan or friend. We use it to share, photos, videos, all the things. Those of you who have personal accounts use it for. I know this morning when I got up, I posted on Facebook. I have about almost 500 friends myself on Facebook, and I told all of them that if you're in Atlanta and you don't go to Sweet George's Juke Joint, then don't blame me, blame yourself, okay? The food was that good. So they know if they live in Atlanta or if they're visiting Atlanta, they should go to that restaurant, and the restaurant should appreciate me for posting that message. We also use it to promote commission-sponsored events and other events that we support. We do some polls on relevant health topics. How many have you had a flu shot, that sort of thing. We do public social marketing campaigns, or media campaigns, as some people call them. So we use Facebook as a place where we, as part of our call to action, where we drive people to. And Facebook is really good for hosting raffles and contests. Sometimes people need incentives to like you. businesses find that out. You know, they do. You know, you give out good candy if you're one of the tables in the exhibition halls, or you know, you got a calculator or something. So we use it for that purpose as well. Twitter, we've launched in February 2009. We have 5,400 followers. We use it a lot to post breaking news. Before I send a press release out, it's up on Twitter. It's on Facebook. And we do much as we do with Facebook. We share relevant content links and so forth, and we retweet a lot of other people's posts, and we get them to retweet our posts. We, for the first time, used Twitter to tweet live from the Boston flu summer during the H1N1 pandemic, and we used the hashtag flu summit, and we also tweeted from the first H1N1 flu clinic we held. YouTube was the first platform we used. We started that in October 2008. We have up as of Friday when I finished this PowerPoint, we had 190 videos that we had uploaded. I think the most important number here on this slide is that we have over 100,000 video views. In other words, people who watch any of our videos, which is, I think, a pretty impressive number. We also have a blog, as I mentioned, Healthy Food on the Budget. It's written by one of our staffers who's a registered dietitian, and that blog averages 10,000 monthly hits. And there's the podcast, Boston Health Click, and we use it to post, you know, to do interviews with sort of experts. We used it a lot. It was one of the first places we went, that and YouTube, when we were trying to get information out about H1N1. So we tend to, we have our website is bphc.org, which is Boston Public Health Commission.org. So for flu season, we created buttons to make it very easy for people, if they go to our page, to find out where they could get a flu shot. They could subscribe to get updates on flu activity in Boston. And we found that to be a very effective way, very easy to find. It's right there on the home page. If you're looking for a free vaccination, there's the button. If you want to sign up so you'll know how much flu activity there is circulating in Boston, you can subscribe there. And we also directed, we also used our website on all the TV, print, and radio ad, and we redesigned our Facebook and YouTube landing pages to reflect the campaign creative, which I'll show you in just a second. There we go. This campaign doing H1N1 was called, we called it the GOT campaign. Got hands, watch them. Watch them. Got a cough, cover it. Got a pulse, get a flu shot. And so we redesigned our YouTube page. We redesigned our YouTube page to reflect the campaign creative. So we, just to continue this thread a little bit, we promoted the flu clinics on Facebook and Twitter. And as I mentioned, we posted a bunch of flu videos on YouTube. And we also put those videos on Facebook and links to them on Twitter, tweeted from flu clinics. It was a real interactive experience for us. Again, this is our Healthy Boston, where we were asking people if they had were planning to get a flu shot, and people were responding. There was a real dialogue going on and a lot of retweeting. And that's yours truly, tweeting from the flu clinic. And local TV reporters found it interesting, like, what are you doing? I'm letting people know we have short lines. So sometimes when you use social media, even the traditional, the dinosaurs will come out and say, hey, that's pretty cool. Look what you guys are doing. So this is the commercial that we did just last year. And again, we directed people to our website. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just go play that. Will it play for me?
Let's see. Oh no!
I thought that thing was embedded. Okay, we'll get it toward the end. I'm sorry about that. And what you didn't see, because I couldn't play the commercial, this is a little flu bug that makes an appearance in the commercial, and we use this as our profile picture on Facebook. In other words, we tried to integrate whatever our campaigns were into all of the various platforms. So if it was, you know, on Facebook, we changed the little pictures to the flu bug, and you would see the same picture on our website and so forth. So here's an example of, I think, how we sort of married the whole surveillance thing with the social media. We saw in Boston, from data that Julia was and her team was showing us, that we had a real big problem with sexually transmitted diseases in Boston, particularly among young people, particularly chlamydia. And so I had an intern who I sent out to go talk to kids to see how much knowledge they had about chlamydia, because it's one of those STIs that is not readily apparent to a lot of people. And one of the things that I found out after his interviews was what they did not want to hear Boston Public Health telling them about this infection and that they should protect themselves and wear a condom. They wanted to hear from their peers. And so what we did was we sponsored a YouTube contest, and we got, you know, several entries, many entries, and the winning video ended up being the campaign that we embraced. And these are kids, these were two teenagers from one of the neighborhoods in Boston who came up with this concept, you know, came up with the TV ad and this concept. A perfect score on the SATs might be hard, but preventing STIs isn't. Do your homework, protect yourself, don't get infected. What was so beautiful about that campaign was that it's an example that one of the things that's wonderful about social media is that you really have to speak the language of your audience. And you have to use all the available tools at your disposal. You have to go where they go for information. And we did that with this campaign. We created a Facebook page called Boston Sex Ed. It was the hub for teens to discuss the topic. And we enlisted several of the teens who submitted YouTube videos to provide the status updates on Facebook. And we also had print and TV ads and we sent listeners and users to our Facebook page. That particular page has more than 2,000 likes. And we tweeted stats about STIs and about the campaign. And this was just a screen grab of the Get Real, Check Yourself video contest, it was called. And as you can see, there was some discussion online about that. And this is what the Facebook page looked like. And these are the two girls who submitted the winning video, two teenagers who helped us come up not only with the winning, with the commercial that we ended up using, but also the tagline. And this is just another example of that page and its interactivity. And here's another video that I can't show you, it looks like. Mm-hmm. So we're going to show, I'll show you these videos at the end because they really are worth seeing. Just a little bit more of the campaign. This is a print ad. And the mayor of Boston said that this campaign breaks new ground for the city of Boston and our efforts to reach young people wherever they are, be it on Facebook or watching BET. Again, this is a campaign that received not only local coverage, but also some national news coverage, including a front page story in our major daily, the Boston Globe. We also used social media in a big way for a campaign we had to encourage young people to refuse violence and to set a good example for handling conflicts. We customized, and we created a B1 example Facebook page, and we also customized this page on MySpace and YouTube. We directed, in all of our ads and printed material, we directed people to that B1 example Facebook page, which has 2,000 likes. We also put together this social street team of 13 teens who were trained by a social marketing firm on how to maintain the online sites and to produce the content. And we also use a mobile application where kids could basically send a text message about how they were being a good example and in their community. And this is what the this is what the Facebook page looks like. And this is what the YouTube channel looks like. And some of the lessons that we've learned over the last 2.5 years that we've been using social media is that you have to consider whether the technology fits the audience. And I would probably add to that whether the technology is meaningful for the response, what you're trying to make happen. Because I don't think we were successful using mobile technology. We didn't have a good enough ask. You know, if you're inviting people to text, you know, to get, you know, a six pack of bottled water, if you to enter a raffle and go to the page or something, maybe it works. We just did not find that it was a really good use for the Be One Example campaign, and it was quite disappointing. Also, it's better if you develop a calendar so that, you know, you every day you know that you have one or two things that you can post on Facebook or Twitter. You just can't always let things happen organically. Sometimes there are, you know, new things happening at the commission, or we got some new data points that we want to put out there, and we can do it on that day. But it's best to sort of plan ahead. And as I mentioned earlier, you got to really find your voice and speak the language of your audience. That's key. Whatever that language is, I mean, what we did for the STI and the B1 example campaigns and why I chose to spotlight those, because we turned over those pages to them. It freaked me out because it was bad grammar, and, you know, I had to sometimes intervene and say, you know, this is not your personal Facebook page. This is the commission's page, but it was important for us to give up a little bit of that the control, as you were saying, Joseph, so that the kids could have the kind of dialogue that I think in the end was fruitful for them and for us, because in the first year, we don't even believe these statistics yet, but we've seen a decrease in the rates of chlamydia among the very youth we were targeting in that campaign. So we haven't claimed victory yet, but we think we're on the path to that. And I have to say that some of it, I think, was attributable to that campaign. And be consistent. You can't, you know, take a week hiatus and not engage your audience. If you're not there to do the posting, then there has to be a plan to make sure that someone is there to speak back and to engage. Also, cross-promote is key, meaning that whatever content you put on Facebook, you want on Twitter, same with the videos that you post on YouTube, you want to have a link to them on Twitter and Facebook and on your own website. So cross-promotion is key. It's one way to drive up likes and followers and so forth. And the other thing that we've been talking incessantly about is talking back, meaning that once someone posts, like, that was the best flu clinic ever that the Boston Public Health Commission put on Monday. You talk back. You say, hey, thanks, you rock, your comment rocks something. Because if you don't, it's like someone calls you and you don't pick up the phone. And you want to pick up the phone and answer and say hello, especially if they're giving you a shout out. So if we could just get to those videos, that would be